This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back. First after show of the year. It's good to be back. It's actually the longest break I think we've taken from an after show in a while. Because we took, what, 2 weeks?
2 weeks of no recording. I almost forgot how to speak.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. No, fuck, you know what? I was having this crazy moment, right? And I think I've overcome it, but something happened. Honestly, I have no idea how it happened, but my tongue started to start getting caught in my S's. And I was like,
disintegrate.
No, dude, I had like a lisp.
Disuse.
No, I honestly had a lisp. I couldn't fix it. Yeah. And it was the weirdest thing ever. And
well, I don't know, because I have one, so.
Not really.
Not really, but.
But you had speech issues when you were younger, right? Or you said you had to take speech coaching?
I never actually did it. Oh, okay. My mom always wanted me to, but I refused. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so I started, for some reason my tongue kept getting, what happened was I was drinking too much coffee without water and my mouth was getting really dry at the start of each day. And then as a result, for some reason because I had braces and I had like the wire at the back of my teeth. I think you have it as well. Do you have the wire?
No, I never had braces.
Oh, okay.
Probably another thing I should have got when I was younger as well.
You have really straight teeth though.
Yeah, in the end I had fucked up teeth, but the doctors were right. They're like, oh no, if you just par course, just stay on, they will go straight, and in the end they did.
You've never had braces?
Never had
them. Oh wow, your teeth are really straight. And then anyway, so my tongue, like when the mouth got really dry, it kept catching on the back of my on the back of this wire. And so the S, I couldn't pronounce my S's properly.
Wait, so you still have a wire?
Yeah. No, you keep it on for life.
Really?
It's a tiny wire though. It's really small. It's really, really small. Yeah. Everyone that's had braces will have a wire at the back of their teeth.
You just can't see it.
Yeah, can't see it. Anyway, and I started getting really nervous. And then, you know, it's one of those things where if you're not thinking about it, it's fine. It's not an issue. Your subconscious behavior takes over and you speak and it's fine. It's not an issue. But because I was thinking about it all the time, I'd wake up. It's like when people have anxiety, right? They get anxiety because they think, do I have anxiety right now? Am I anxious? And it makes them anxious, right? So it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy. So that was what was happening. I was like, is my tongue going to get caught on the back of this S? And every single time I would speak, it was getting stuck. And Ev started going, something wrong with your S's. And I was like, oh no, it's getting really bad. But thank God it went away. Because I was like, oh, if I was just like a digital programmer, it wouldn't matter. But I have a fucking podcast where I have to speak for a living.
It'd be a disaster.
It would be awful. Absolutely awful, bro. You'd have to take over. I wouldn't speak. I just had put all my sentences together without using an S.
Oh no.
So
we had that challenge once. It was like say the sentence without using the letter S. It's very challenging.
Right.
It's really hard.
Without saying the letter S.
Without the letter S.
Right, okay. Oh right, like you say.
See how far you can go without saying the letter.
Yeah, it's tough. But anyway, so I wanted to address something really quick coming into the new year. So it's January 5th today. But it's coming out tomorrow. The UK, there's a few of my friends in the UK and they are, I think it's probably one of the worst hit countries right now, at least in the Western world. And so just a shout out to anyone that is listening home in the UK in a tier 4 lockdown. I know it's an absolute disaster over there at the moment. Things are pretty grim.
And the reason they did that is because they've got a worse strain, right? Like a more contagious
one. There seems like a strain that's 50% more contagious. Not necessarily more deadly, but more contagious. I know the hospital systems are overrun. They've called in the military to build to take people into outdoor, like makeshift hospitals. They're telling people if you don't have to come in, don't come in. They're thinking about turning full hospitals into just COVID wards. And I know it's like hitting thousands of deaths a day. So yeah, just want to keep you guys in our thoughts. Obviously, UK's a great country. Plenty of people that we know in our lives from the UK as well. They live in Bondi. But yeah, I know things are pretty grim over there right now. But, you know, the things you can control are the things you should focus on. And those are things like, you know, the food you put in your body, what time you go to bed, your routine, working out. I know you've done it. I know it's been, you've done it the first time, and you did it the second time. And now you're going to have to do it a third time. But you will get through it. There will be a light at the end of the tunnel. It will eventually go away at some point. I know they're distributing the vaccine as of this week as well. And I know that's a long process and it's a difficult process and it's not going to be an overnight fix. I heard some things like it's going to take 8 to 12 months to kind of, you know, get enough people vaccinated. So yeah, I mean, just hang in there, like stay strong and, you know, just try and find the silver lining, try and stay positive, put good inputs into your ears and your eyes, and yeah, follow the right stuff. So we are thinking about you guys. So yeah, the UK shout out, stay strong.
That is nuts. I assume gyms are closed again.
Yeah, gyms are closed, and some permanently. So
yeah,
it is tough. And then speaking of good inputs, so I think on the last after show in December, I had deleted Instagram. I think maybe for a couple of days at that point. So it's been, or it had been nearly 2 weeks, or I think just on 2 weeks when I had reinstalled it. So in the 2 weeks, what was interesting was the main reason I think I spoke about last time that I deleted it was because I was really distracted. I couldn't focus, and it was becoming just a point of frustration, just being sitting down and just constantly, even if it wasn't going for my phone, my brain was just distracted. Say I had five things to do, my brain would bounce between the five tasks that I had to get done, and nothing would get done. I wasn't able to just stick on the one task very well. So I was losing productivity. So anyway, 2 weeks went by, holidays. Obviously, I think I would say phone time probably goes up during the holidays. People just have more downtime. They're more bored. They're just sitting around. Man, it's interesting observing everyone else, because I basically didn't barely touch my phone. My screen time went down like 61%. Like, it's dramatic. Yeah, it's just like watching everyone use their phone, and
How did you survive without everyone's helpful advice on setting 2021 goals?
Don't worry, I've got that covered.
Surely you need those thousands of posts letting you know their strategy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I knew that I would wanted to. First of all, one thing I observed was Instagram is like, it's one of those things where if someone sees someone else using it, they start using it. So it's almost like this flow on chain effect, butterfly effect of, okay, I'm going to quickly pull out Instagram and look at these couple of stories. And then, you know, because someone goes, oh, I'm going to post this on a story. So they post on a story, and then they look at the next four stories, and then someone sees them look at the story, so they pull it out. And then the other person sees the other person. Next thing you know, there's four or five people on their phones. It's like, guys, we came here for lunch. What are we doing? And it was interesting because I think it was quite, I think a lot of it's on a lot of people's minds right now. And
I hear it all the time.
Yeah, because when I was telling people that I was doing it, people were like, oh, something I really want to do. And a few people started trying to do a sort of similar thing. But what I realized was your willpower will always lose out to the system, right? It's too powerful. It's too addictive. So you actually have to build a system, because I wanted to bring it back, because I still think there's value in using Instagram. It's the age we live in, right? Yeah. So I want people to stay up to date with what I'm doing. I want to provide people value on my platform with our audiences. So I went on, I unfollowed a bunch of different pages and people that I haven't seen their stuff in a while, and I muted everyone, posts and stories. So when I go into my Instagram feed now, which I've like broken that addiction, which is good, is, it only shows my own stuff that I post, but...
Oh, so just the good stuff?
Yeah. But there's like a couple of ads because it's in between it. But once you get to there...
They can't stop the ads, bro.
It's just like, you are fully up to date. Mm. You've seen everything. And then there's no stories that come up. Like, it's just empty, no stories. And I can use the messaging when I need to message people on it as well, because it's good for networking. I was like, you know, I was kind of filtering through, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll keep this person.
But aren't there some people you still want to...
Well, okay, so this is what I was going to say, right? So there were some people like, say, Andrew Huberman, who's the neuroscientist and has been on a few different podcasts recently. And I'm like, every time he posts really good stuff. Yeah. It's really
there's lots of really good stuff.
And then so there's some other pages, like I really want to stay up to date with what RecGen's posting and stuff like that. But then you know what I realized? I'm like, if I really want that information and it's really valuable to me, I can get it elsewhere. It doesn't have to be through Instagram. Huberman has a podcast. He also has a book. You know, these people have other sources to gain information. I shouldn't use Instagram as an education platform. It's too short form. The attention span isn't there. And so I thought, read more. I'll have time for more podcasts, more audiobooks, more actual books. And I spent probably $500 on new books, like just over the break, just buying tons and tons of different books. And I've been reading heaps of them. And so it's been really productive. And I know a few people reached out from the last episode. Think they were considering...
DM'd you on Instagram.
Yeah, they did.
Didn't you listen?
But it was very old when I got back to them. They're suffering from different things, but similar sort of things. Like, oh, you know, I compare myself to other people's progress all the time, and I feel really defeated about my own training and that sort of stuff. And, you know, I'd tell people, look, it's your choice. You know, you can decide. You don't have to be on the app. Yes, it's the world we live in. Yes, it connects with everyone. Like, look, I definitely missed out on what some people were doing. And, like, I kind of wanted to know what some people were up to, but that's just part of... that's one of the things you lose out when you choose not to use the app. So now, you know, I have to sit there and I have to actually genuinely go, what have you been up to the last few days? Mm. Instead of this assumed knowledge that, oh, bro, you saw that video I posted. How funny was it when, you know, those girls, you know, jumped in the pool and did that thing? Well, no, I don't know now. Now you actually have to recount it to me. And I realize there is a lot of assumed, oh, you know what I've done the last few days. And that's gone now. So it is interesting, but I definitely have my focus back. I have my productivity back. My priorities feel more organized in my head. I feel less overwhelmed. That's definitely a big one. And I think that like my memory recall is better. And it's honestly, I didn't realize how bad it was until I basically stopped now. And I feel much better for it.
Yeah, I do think it's a popular one. I've heard a number of people doing it. Not always Instagram, like maybe other apps, I think, for other people.
Like Snapchat or TikTok or something.
Yeah, they get more into it. Even LinkedIn, I think, for people that work a lot for business.
Yeah.
And we've been using it. I think it's a pretty fun app as well. Man, one recommendation I'll have is they did a Business Wars episode on TikTok versus Instagram. I think they're just finishing it now. You know they do a series of episodes?
Oh, yeah. One of the episodes is out?
Yeah, no, a bunch of them. Okay. A bunch of them. It's like they're pretty short episodes, but it's about like the, you know, they're starting the business and then Facebook buys them. Everyone knows that. But then the battle between TikTok and Instagram, man, it is very interesting. If anyone is like interested in the history of it,
okay,
it is unbelievable.
The battle in terms of...
Well, it's got the initial Instagram story, which is completely nuts.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They got bought for $1 billion before they'd made a single dollar of revenue.
Yeah, yeah. And it was 13 employees. Yeah,
fucking no one there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally crazy. And how quickly it was as well, and like kind of how the idea comes about. It kind of all started with filters.
Did the founder stay on board, that guy?
Yeah, they did. So the founder stayed on board.
Is he still on board?
No, I think now they've exited. So they often, with those big acquiring, you do have to work for a long period of time in it.
In these acquisitions.
But like, it went sour pretty quickly because of all the terms of service.
Sure.
And I don't know if you've seen it, but they actually redid their terms of service like in the last couple of weeks, Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's got even like more crazy in like kind of, and that's why I think the founders got off it.
Yeah.
They weren't happy with like kind of how like.
Wait, they only got out recently, the founders?
They've been out for a little bit now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's been going downhill, you know, for a while. Yeah. Same with WhatsApp.
Okay.
WhatsApp.
Because of the privacy issues?
Yeah, the people were kind of upset with the
direction. But Facebook, Facebook bought WhatsApp.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they, kind of, they were upset in the end of
right.
the direction. Everyone gets bought, gets upset with the direction it ends up going from Facebook. But yeah, the battle between the juggernauts is it's fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting. So another update for you guys. We obviously Locker Room is still underway. We're still building it. We've unfortunately got a good builders that worked all through the break and didn't really take any holidays and kept working, which is great. So the progress has been really solid. You know, stay up to date with all the stuff we're doing on Instagram and LinkedIn for all the Locker Room updates. But, you know, I will say that, you know, one thing that I think people are potentially concerned about with the opening Locker Room is that we'll do less podcasting this year. There's no plans to do less podcasting necessarily. We obviously put aside, you know, this is a well-organized, well-oiled machine. We get out plenty of content. But, you know, it will take a lot of our focus this year, obviously starting this new brand, this new business. But it's important that for us to document and share the story for ourselves, but also for you guys. So, don't fear. I know some people are concerned, oh, what's going to happen to the podcast and this and that. No, we'll still
put our content. But also, everywhere. More important than that is that I strongly believe that if you just do podcasts, it gets stale after a while. So, if the only thing in our lives was doing the podcast, it would get stale because you have not much life experience.
Yeah.
That point, you don't work with any clients or you don't train yourself. It's like, you know, you stop bringing new stuff to the show.
Yeah.
Whereas I think what we'll find, what I'm hoping is that doing Locker Room already, it's like changed my perspective on some of the things with training, working with all different types of clients. I'm excited to work with clients that we can give more stuff to that we have in the past.
Yeah.
Right? Because like more attention, you know, new shit, like the fucking, what do we have before this?
The whoops.
No, like the IV treatment and shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
All different levels. And I think that is what's going to keep happening, and then that just builds our knowledge base and builds the experience base.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting insight for you guys. I mean, it's kind of like you're starting with us and following the journey as we kind of build this new company. So plans are hopefully we can open this thing next month and start a skeleton schedule. But right now, we're in the middle of the build. So I'm posting on my Instagram, I'm posting some build updates in my feed. So if you want to check out the build updates, you can see him in my feed. So just kind of how the whole place is coming together. So, that's how that thing's going. So, coming back to the lockdown and obviously all the controversy and stuff with the vaccine, even though there shouldn't be a controversy, how do you feel about taking this vaccine?
Well, I don't know when we're going to get it. It seems like hopefully in the first half of the year.
Yeah.
But I liked it when I was talking about it with you, which was like, and I hadn't really thought about it that way too much, but it seems like there's kind of two choices. You can take the vaccine and not get COVID, or you can not take the vaccine and get COVID at a certain point, right? Because almost definitely if you just go through your life, you're probably going to get it at some point, right? If you never took the vaccine.
Yeah, but maybe not in Australia.
Yeah, maybe. But I assume, you know, people
unless
are going
to open international borders.
They'll open, life will start to go back at to some normal point, and it's going to hang around. And at some point, you'll likely catch it.
Yeah.
Which one would I rather get? I'd probably rather get whatever maybe negative comes with having the vaccine, if there is any.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm sure there's probably some stuff they don't know about the vaccine, but I'm sure there's definitely some stuff they don't know about getting COVID.
Yeah.
It could go south. We've already seen for sure it goes south in some people.
Yeah.
Definitely more south, I'd imagine, in terms of health prospects than having the vaccine.
Yeah.
So if I was picked between the two, yeah, it might not be perfect, but I think I'd say go on the side of the vaccine.
Yeah. What do you think about for sport? Because like obviously sport, you know, your body is your asset. And getting COVID would obviously cause issues. I heard something about some NBA teams that got COVID, shook it off really easy, but now there's some long-term issues showing up for them.
Particularly any sport that is like relies on cardiovascular fitness.
Yeah.
They like really don't want the athletes to get it.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think is the long-term solution for... Like, you would almost imagine that pretty much any athlete that's protecting themselves will get vaccinated. Like, you'd almost think as an athlete, you'd want to get all your vaccinations.
Yeah,
because like you don't want to get sick from any virus, right? The more you can protect yourself, the better, because you are an asset.
We've actually had people at the gym, and there's been like studies on lots of people that have had like long-term respiratory issues from having COVID.
Yeah.
Which is like a disaster if your sport relies on cardiovascular fitness, which is most sports.
So imagine, right? So technically, I'm not sure how it works. Maybe you know, but if you play for the Dallas Cowboys or whatever, are you owned by the Dallas Cowboys? Like, are you an asset? Are you like part of their business assets? Like, can they?
No, you're just an employee.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can't. They can't force you to get a vaccine.
No, but it could be a term of being in employment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that that's actually a thing? You could do that.
Yeah.
Could we do that as a gym potentially?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know. That'd be interesting.
You can't force someone to do it. Hey, if you need to work, same as if you work at a childcare center.
Yeah.
You have to have your
vaccines. That's interesting. Yeah.
I think most places will do that.
Yeah,
yeah,
it doesn't make sense. No, speaking of...
Which is why if you choose not to have the vaccine, it's almost impossible. Because you almost just can't get on with regular life.
There's so many restrictions.
You can't send your kids to childcare, you can't travel. So that's why most people now, like even if maybe you are against it, it's like too hard to just live a regular life.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I get it. I definitely get it. You know what was interesting? Over the break, I was maintaining... I reckon I trained pretty well. Like I trained... I did a lot of double days, and then I had a lot of days where I did nothing. So I'd do like, say, I'd train 3 days in the week, but those 3 days were a lot more intense, and then I'd have like 4 days where I didn't do nothing. Because just some days, you're just so filled with your schedule with family stuff that you just don't get much time to train. But it was interesting how my body feels from a double day, or doing intense double days, versus doing what I've done most of the year, which is... Most days I would train, but I would do a much easier, much lighter session. I'd do 30, 40-minute sessions, kind of project body, project strong sort of stuff, or just a WOD here and there. I actually find with the double days that my recovery is a lot worse. Like, I'm more beat up. I'm definitely... I find it harder to sleep. And by the second session, I'm almost getting like headaches from just sweating so much and being so, it's like dehydrated from the training. What do you I don't know if you've done double days recently, but what do you think about double days versus single days versus the low intensity, high intensity stuff now?
I struggled tons with double days. I did them for a very long time. Particularly, I struggled with summer. I remember I used to always be like cramping like 5 minutes into the second session. I think double days are awesome, but they take like level 9 preparation, whereas single days take like level 3 preparation.
Yeah.
Like double days, you're like, okay, like all your food for the day like needs to be pretty ready.
Yeah.
Your hydration, that's been the hardest one for me because I sweat so much, but I do think I got really on top of it now. But I like carry around Hydrolite tablets, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I got a pretty good idea about what I need to drink in a day to pull it off. But if that's off, like I forget to drink, the second session is rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, if I sweat like a fountain session one, like I can't just go and do whatever and then turn up and expect a great session at 3 o'clock. Whereas I find with one session, the room for error is a lot bigger. So if I go through a portion of the day, maybe dehydrated or not eating, you know, it's not ideal, but I can catch that up at the end of the day, get my calories in, hydrate and turn up pretty good the next day. But if I had to have turned it up for a good session later in the day, yeah, the margin for error is just not there. So I think they are awesome. And I think I feel good when I do them, but you really need to have your shit dialed in.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about it as well is I find on the double days, the way I eat food is very different to the way, like my hunger levels.
Exactly, your mindset is so different, right?
Well, I just found that when I was doing the double days, when I sat down to eat food, I found it really difficult in recent times, and this is something I would do most days, to eat till I'm like sick full, right? And I used to do that all the time. I was pretty normal. I'd say 80% of the meals, I would sit down, I would basically eat till I'm like almost going to pass out because I'm so full. In the last 2-3 years, I almost, like, the thought of that makes me feel sick. Like me trying to do the 10,000 calorie challenge again, but I ain't got that in me. I barely got the 5,000 calorie challenge in me. But what I noticed was on the double days, I could push myself to that sick feeling, like where I could eat and eat and eat until the point I'm like, oh, I'm so full. Yeah. And I was noticing, man, I haven't felt like this in ages when I eat. Because normally when I eat, I just eat till I'm good 60, 70, 80% full. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I don't need to eat anymore. And I think it's almost because, like, the exercise, I know the exercise is not putting me in so that much of a deficit. And I can even tell from the Whoop strap as well. So almost subconsciously, I'm like, no, you don't need to eat this much because you haven't trained that hard. You train just enough. So just keep your eating at a reasonable level. But when I do two hard double days, and the thing was these two sessions, like they're both really hard sessions. Like come the second session, I'm midway through the workout and I'm like, fuck, I'm really digging in here to keep this thing going. And like it's one of those sessions where like yesterday I was doing one and I stopped sweating halfway through the workout. I was pouring sweat. And then second, and then like halfway through, stop sweating. I'm like, I've fucking run out of sweat.
That's when you go into heat stroke.
Dude, I was like overheating. Like I was stripping down. I was like, fuck, had to turn the aircon, the fans on because I couldn't, my body stopped sweating. I think I'm so dehydrated. And yeah, I just realized that you just go, it's almost like exponentially more of a deficit. And I think your body, like all the signals in your body get thrown off. Like when you have that good balanced level of exercise where you don't, you know, we always talk about adaptation, like not doing too much, like the sunburn versus the suntan, right? Because I was like constantly tanning through the year. Now I feel like the double days is like sunburn. It's like overdoing it. My body's just like, cool, just smash heaps of calories, like drink heaps of water, like the sweat thing. And it just started getting weird. And so, I mean, it was good for the time, but I just don't think it's a productive way to train, to be honest. And you're tired, like you're really tired the rest of the day. And I get the tired but wired. So like last night, I was exhausted. I was lying in bed. I couldn't sleep. Didn't fall asleep till like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it really made me question, like, man, when we were training, maybe double days wasn't the best thing.
There were definitely points where it wasn't the best thing, particularly I think when it was really hot and we'd come back like exhausted for the second one, particularly because the first session was, you know, over 2 hours of training. The only thing I like about, I think, when you do 2 days is that I do think it can often give you like a bit more discipline in your day. Because you're like, you just know you got to be on all day.
Yeah,
you can't go eat shit. You can't, like, you have to be disciplined with your whole day because you know how I'm going to regret it later if I'm not disciplined.
But it makes that a priority. It makes your training the priority is what I've noticed. You know what I mean? Like, right now, I'm happy for it to be my priority because, you know, we're kind of working half days at the moment till next week. But at least for most of the year, it's not our priority. So I'm happy to kind of do a session. You know, to be fair, I do some double days, but it's more like I go for a run in the morning and I do weights in the evening. But I'm not really counting that as a double day. That's almost like one session split into two. Whereas I'm talking about these double days, it's like, cool, strength work.
Proper sessions.
Hard conditioning, strength work, hard conditioning.
Big difference.
Big difference.
Because I'll just do half now, half later.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing which was for me like an amazing example of like how much more of a toll. So I always knew, like, you know, working out in the heat takes more of a toll on your body, right?
Yeah.
Compared to not. So we haven't had a lot of hot days. We've had some. And this is a perfect example. So I had one week holiday in Byron Bay. I went for a run on the beach, right? Pretty hard run, but it's like an hour and 10 minutes. We're trying to get to the end of the beach. We didn't actually get to the end of the beach. It's a fucking long beach. It's 10 kilometers. So anyway, that hour run, I got a 16.6 strain. Really hot.
That's high.
I got crazy sunburn. I came back like black after this. So you saw me, right? That was like one day in the sun. I was fucking black. I was like,
that's only one day in the sun.
1 hour.
Oh my God.
I got savaged in the sun, right? It was really hot. I got 16.6 strain on the run. I didn't try and go my hardest, but like it was hot. It took me a long time to cool down. And then I went.
How many Ks?
It was like 10 kilometers. I mean, just over 10. On like softish sand running.
That's hot.
Which is probably the first I've ever run on sand. And then, anyway, we came back and having this argument with this guy who did an 18 strain on a workout. He's like, you don't know 18 strain. I've actually never done 18 strain on a workout.
On a workout?
Yeah, I've obviously had 18 strain days, but I've never had one activity, like one workout activity. And he did it and he ran for about an hour 25. So anyway, I was like, okay, bro, I could definitely do it. I was like, I'm just going to run. I'm going to open the strain coach and I'll run until I get to 18.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a nice, like, cool day, right? Because we had terrible weather. Nice and cool, like, good conditions, like, light drizzle of rain. So you're not hot. I just tried to run like at a similar pace. Wasn't on Sam, but it was regular.
Yeah.
And I was just waiting, trying to get this up. Man, I ran for like 2 hours and I still wasn't there.
Far out.
And that was the end. I didn't even get as much strain as running an hour hard in the sun.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, it's crazy.
The toll on your body of just like being in the heat, outside, like sun beating down, drenched in sweat, is so much more than I think people take into consideration.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is people look at the Whoop strain and they go, oh, well, I did, you know, back squats and I did, you know, rowing intervals and that was so hard. But then I went for a walk and the strain was high.
Mm.
And I'm like, the technology is not wrong. It's just your perception of what should be harder. You think should be, you know, you think this should be harder because in your mind it's harder on your body, but that's not necessarily true. Your body is just being more strained from going for a hard walk in the sun, in the heat, dehydrated for 2 hours.
It hits you hard.
It does. Yeah. It's just, you just don't think of walking as that hard on your body, but it can be.
And in truth, when I reflected on it, like the next day when I woke up, I was destroyed from the run.
Yeah.
Like my back was like so burned. I was still hot. Yeah. Like my ankle, everything. Like I genuinely felt destroyed. But from the other one, even though it was like double as long, I was running for like only 2 hours. Yeah, I was like, all right. Yeah. And later in the day, I actually felt fine. Like I probably could have worked out you know, if I wanted to. So yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's hard to put it in the perception, but the toll on your body, the environment and everything, like, makes a massive difference.
Big difference.
Yeah, it's not just about like exactly what I did.
No. Yeah. And I think that's what's the beautiful thing about using a technology like Whoop, where you get the 24/7 strain, is that you can really start to notice, oh, wow, when I do this, and everyone's body is different. That's why it's like so interesting. Like what I started to notice is probably not a good thing, but throughout most of the year, like, and you speak to this as well, what, maybe I'll have one or two drinks a month, maybe. And it'll be
alcohol,
like...
alcohol drinks.
Yeah, alcoholic drinks. You know, it might be an event and I have one or two and I'm good. You know, like I just dinner with a friend, I'm catching up. He has a beer, I have a beer, that's it. But come December, you compress about...
every day.
You can compress 2 weeks of heavy drinking, you know, in a short space of time. What I've noticed is because my tolerance is so low throughout the year, like one or two beers and I'm like, my head's spinning.
Yeah.
But by the time I get to day 8, day 9, the one or two beers, it drops my recovery score instantly, right?
That's a guarantee for me.
Yeah, but...
I've never been in the green after drinking.
Right, yeah, okay. So, but come, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 days into heavy drinking, I can do 3 or 4 beers and my Whoop score will go up the next day. So, it's interesting how quickly your tolerance builds up. So
yeah, that is one thing I've never experienced, but I have heard, because we had a client come back and he's like, man, I've drunk every day and like for like nearly 2 weeks. Last night I didn't drink and I woke up in the middle of the night like drenched in sweat from not drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, that's an experience I have not had.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's weird because like...
I guess it's kind of like coffee maybe. Like if I don't drink it, I'm worse.
You know how you crave coffee a little bit? You think about a coffee when you wake up. I got to the point where I'm like, I'm really thinking about having a beer at lunch today. And that thought never crosses my mind, right? And I could have 3 or 4 beers and it wouldn't affect my Whoop score. And so it's just interesting, and basically making the point that it is all individualized, how people can have, it's because that's what they've gotten used to. That's what they've gotten, their body's gotten used to tolerating. They have, you know, the enzymes and liver tolerance built up to process more alcohol. So it just, when you put more alcohol in, your body is built to process it. It's not good. It's not a good thing. It's not a good adaptation, but it is an adaptation, which, you know, you can see the strain doesn't affect. Because, you know, if I'm going beer for beer with someone, we both got the Whoop on, like now that I haven't drunk in 2 weeks or whatever, the strain's really high for me. But for him, it might be really low. It's not hard. But my body's working really hard to process one beer, whereas, you know, his body's super efficient at processing one beer. But we go for a run, you know, we do 5Ks, you know, maybe it's a 6 strain, but for him it's like an 18 strain. It's just what you get used to. It's what you're adapted to doing.
That was one definitely thing I implemented this summer that I had. It was the opposite of what I used to do. So we talked about, because drinking affects your sleep. It's like the worst thing from alcohol is it affects your sleep. It's better if you just drink early in the day. I was always the opposite. I was always like, no, you want to drink like right before you go to bed. So it's just like, you just sleep it off and it's done.
Oh, no.
As opposed to like, you know, I'm like, I never want to drink early in the day. Because then the whole day I'm like negatively influenced by this alcohol and like, you know, whatever, I can't train or just can't, you know, I'm just like in some way negative. But if you drink, then you sleep and it's done.
Yeah.
And you've like, your body has had the opportunity to, I guess, process it.
This yeah,
totally non-scientific. This is in my brain. I was like, no, you give your body the opportunity straight after drinking to process it. But now that I've found out that like it's the most negative part of it is just your sleep.
Yeah.
Because the hydration you can just fix, obviously, from drinking water. But the sleep is the bit that there's nothing you can really do about. I've made a massive effort. I'm going to drink, try and shift the drinking earlier in the day.
Oh, if there's an opportunity and I know it's going to be a big session, I always opt for a lunch as opposed to a dinner. Always.
Which is like total mindset. Always better strategy. Total mindset shift for me. I always thought better was the opposite.
Man, pretty much this is how I think about it, and this is how I encourage you guys listening to think about it, is when the sun goes down and your body's getting ready to sleep, anything you do that isn't a sleep-related thing is trying to keep your body up. So that includes eating, that includes activity, that includes alcohol, drugs, whatever it might be. But it could even be just like chatting loudly to someone and playing video games. These are all things that are not good for sleep. So when the sun goes down, I try and if I'm out doing stuff, I'm trying to do stuff that's not very hectic. Someone's like, cool, let's go to like a nightclub where it's really loud and stuff. I'm like, I'd rather just sit at a bar where it's quieter, you know? Because
I'd rather go to that nightclub at 10 a.m.
Yeah,
ideally.
The day club. But that's why I always opt for the day stuff, because you want to, as best you can, you want to keep your circadian rhythm in sync as much as you can. And I've noticed, because my circadian rhythm is so off at the moment, there was like a good 5 or 6 days I was just trying to like readjust it. And it takes a while to readjust. It takes a while. If I went to bed at midnight 5 days in a row, trying to get to bed at 10. Well,
it's the same.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's the same as traveling.
You've got to walk it back very slowly.
It's a day. What do they say? It's 24 hours for 1 hour.
Yeah.
So you throw it off 4 hours, it takes you.
We actually had to get to the point where it was like, all right, this circadian rhythm is not syncing up properly. And so I had to, obviously I was making a bigger effort to get more sunlight in the morning, but I was actually not watching TV. And I was like, I can't, even with the blue light blockers, I'm like, I just can't have any screens on right now because I'm so wired at 10 p.m. I feel like it's 5 p.m., you know, so had to work hard to keep that as it is. All right, let's, before we move on to the listener questions, we've got some listener questions. Thanks for sending those in. We talked about AXP. Yeah, I think we talked about it maybe a couple of times, which is Activated Nutrients' new product, activatedxperformance.com.au.
Yes.
It's a... I went to the launch party, a small launch party in Sydney with some of the boys from the Greater Western Sydney Giants, which is an AFL team. I must say, I'm going to watch some AFL this year, and the boys want me to come along, so they get me tickets to the games and stuff. And we interviewed Matt. So Matt DeBauer, one of the players at the team, he'll be training at Locker Room. But he's also, we did an interview with him. It's going to come out in a few weeks. But me and him, we keep bumping into each other. We're getting along really well. He's an absolute legend. But I was talking to him about the product because he's been using it for a while. And I was like, what do you think about this product? I've started using it. I'm not sure if I can tell a difference or not, but you're super in tune. So what are you feeling? He goes, look, I'm kind of with you on that. He goes, I started taking it and I didn't really notice a difference. He goes, but I ran out. And he goes, in the week that I ran out, I definitely noticed a difference. And I thought that was really interesting. So then I ran out a week later and my recovery score dropped dramatically. I could not get myself out of the yellow, out of the red, into the green. Started taking again. Honestly, first day was green. I know I said that before in the last ad, but it is true. And now I've got another course of the probiotic. Or is it a pre or probiotic?
It's a probiotic.
Probiotic. Man, I think there's a difference, eh? Like, I feel better on it. I almost feel like my body can do better with, like, almost a little bit less sleep, a little bit less calories. Like, it's just recovering. But it's a very subtle difference. I think you have to be quite in tune to your body to notice the difference. But this thing is legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't run out, so I haven't got to experience that yet. But probably what I'd recommend, because what I found interesting was just reading up on the website about the science in it. Because we've done episodes on probiotics and stuff like that before. And like, you know, it's probably harder to get your head around maybe than just like carbs and fat and protein. Yeah. But I have always been interested, like, you know, back in the day, we're always trying to eat like... I was like, oh, I've got to get like these vegetables in, like sauerkraut and help your gut fiber and stuff like that. But if you go on, they've actually, and that's why this product came back, because they've done clinical trials on it, on the probiotics and how it affects it. They've even got like, not this one, but they've got a kid's product that I want to get my son on as well.
Yeah.
He's going to be ready. I think in like 6 months, he's allowed to take it.
Okay.
Because it's pretty big for them as well. But yeah, I mean, the science is interesting. So even if you're not sure on the fence of taking it,
yeah.
But if you go on, you see how they did the trials and how they measure like sports performance looking at and controlling for just adding probiotics to someone.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
And is it, they're getting reductions in muscle inflammation, which is fast recovery. That was the metric they're measuring?
Exactly. It's not like like one specific thing. It's all like, it's a bunch of metrics all around recovery.
Okay.
That improve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's very general.
Right.
You know, it's not like maybe say creatine was like, oh, explosive power.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no. So like, I don't think my performance has increased. Like, I don't feel fitter or stronger, but I definitely have noticed, like, I probably the best example I can give you is I've been maintaining my running, and there's honestly been a period of time. I took a little, I probably took a week off running and really heavy, like, knee work, and my knees recovered really well. And, but getting back into running, almost straight away, my knees always kind of flare up a little bit, and I just kind of manage it. Yeah, it sits around a 2, maybe gets up to a 4 out of 10 pain if I'm like really pushing the running. And I got back into running expecting that. You saw me, I fucking ran past you that day on the beach. I got back into running fully expecting that my knees would start hurting again. Zero pain. And I don't know why. Maybe, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe it's some of the, because I'm not doing as much squatting or lunging or whatever. But I started getting back into some lunging and some squatting and some direct knee work. Still no pain. So I don't know. I'm like kind of sitting there. I'm just kind of, you know, it's one of those things. You've had an injury for a while. You're kind of waiting. Okay, when's it gonna come? When's it gonna come? Like, 100%. I'm just, you know, I'm just in this halo period right now, honeymoon period of no injury. Bro, it hasn't come back. I don't know if that's the recovery probiotic, but that is one thing I've observed. Is now I'm getting back into running now on this new course of it, and I just don't have any pain in my knees, which is pretty awesome. Anyway, activatedxperformance.com.au. That is how you can get it. Is that, do we have a code? I think. A link in the description. This episode.
We have a link in the description. We don't have a code for it.
We don't have a code because only the public doesn't have access to it right now. Mm. Only you guys are listening. So that is how you would get it. All right.
Cool.
Listener
we've got two listener questions. We've got first one, Dan Shooter McGavin.
Shooter.
Yeah, fuck that. That is his name.
Shooter.
It seems like the functional fitness world is changing again. Some hate for intensity and some love for long endurance pieces. Some hate for competitive CrossFit and some love for movement expressed over time. It can get confusing for people out there, both experiencing
it. Hate it or love it.
Is there a question there? Maybe just discuss. Thanks. Love the podcast. He's definitely true. I do think that obviously CrossFit started it and then functional fitness has like taken on its own thing now in terms of, I guess, popularity and like different branches of it. It seems like the longer endurance branch of things has got far more popular, which I think is great because it just balances out. I guess it just balances out the whole concept of it, you know, and I think for a lot of people's training, it gives their training a lot more balance as well. Not really 100% sure where the future of it goes. I do think the new guy taking over CrossFit seems to be doing a really good job, and I think he's just bringing it back more to how it used to be.
Yeah,
and he's bringing back a lot of competitions and just getting like just being a good guy.
It's back to the normal format now, right? Open regionals.
Yeah, except no. I think he's making it more inclusive, so they're taking more people from the open now to like another a next stage.
But there's no sanctionals anymore, is there? They got rid of that.
No, they're getting rid of it, but they're not bringing back exactly like regionals. I think it's like they take a much larger percentage of people from the open than they used to, instead of like a really small cut. It's like a pretty big cut. And then I could be wrong on this, but I think you go work out, you know, at a competition with official judges and shit.
Dude, CrossFit's like, I was thinking about it the other day because I was reflecting on some really good, positive memories from when we used to do CrossFit. And it's like an ex-girlfriend. It's like, you know, you forget the reasons that you broke up and you forget all the fighting and all the negative shit you went through, and all you remember, now they're not together, is just the good shit. But then as soon as you get back into it, as soon as you're back with it, you're reminded straight away, oh yeah, this is the reason we broke up. And that's kind of like what CrossFit is for me. I like have so many good memories. I remember all the positive things. Like, how fun was it like throwing down in like random gyms in the US, like just doing like a mad CrossFit workout. Remember when we went to that gym where those weightlifters were in Orange County? I can't remember the name of the guys, Juggernaut.
Yeah.
And they had that CrossFit gym in the other section.
Yeah.
And it was like you and me versus some other two dudes in the class. It was like a partner workout. I was just like wall balls and rowing, and it was like just fun. Like just go in there and smash it.
It's the fucking best. I remember one memory I had was when I was living in Amsterdam, and then we traveled to Germany. We were just like driving through like wherever. I can't remember. We were like in some small town in Germany. And me and my friend dropped in at this gym, and it was like the gym. We like did the class. It was like whatever. And then the gym owner was there. And like one of his mates, and we're like, all right, we're gonna do like Australia versus Germany workout, right? And they were getting so jacked up. We like played both anthems before it. We both got to pick one movement each.
That's sick. It was a couplet.
Yeah, so we said, okay, one movement each. So they picked This guy was really good at gymnastics. He picked muscle ups and we picked squat cleans. Because me and my mate were both quite good at it. And then we like just did this partner workout against each other. Right? It's fucking sick.
Yeah,
right? And sick. I was like, that is unique. And it's a different level to just doing another workout against each other. Right?
It's so sick. But it fucks you up. If you do it too much, it fucks you up. Just like hanging around with your ex too much, it'll fuck you up. It's like playing with fire.
So, man, I don't know exactly the future of it. I do think this guy running CrossFit is doing a mad job. I'm looking at the season now. He's like, there's more in-person stuff. So, I guess it's less like all the online bullshit, which is really cool. But I think what the truth is now is functional fitness has taken on a life of its own outside of CrossFit.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking massive.
Yeah.
It's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good. I think it's been so good for everyone. I'm not really sure. I think like long endurance, it's like OCR is in some ways like functional fitness, obstacle course racing, right?
Yeah.
So it's just taken on a love for its own. I think competitive CrossFit, now this guy's taken up, I think it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
So if you're into the sport, I think there'll be a sport for you, you know, probably in 5-6 years time. It just might not end up being like the biggest thing in functional fitness. Regular functional fitness might be much bigger than CrossFit.
Yeah.
And CrossFit is like maybe the most hardcore of all the functional fitness people.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think, it's really, I mean, obviously the movement, the skill development, like I'm looking at CrossFit gyms and I look at the people that go there that are more advanced and I'm like, they can walk into any functional fitness gym and destroy anyone, right? But I think for the broader population, the functional fitness stuff is good just because I think there's less, even though there is a big emphasis on intensity because that's what keeps people coming back because it's addictive. I think the dumbing down of the programming, almost F45 style, although F45 does generate a lot of injuries. That is my one concern is that I think people are getting the intensity piece right. I think the programming piece they're still getting wrong is they're just, because they're going for more repetitions of lighter weights and bodyweight movements and the emphasis is not on the coaching, the end result is you're still getting a lot of people injured. It's just not happening as quickly as CrossFit because the weights aren't as heavy. So that's really my only concern. So my hate that comes with the functional fitness side of the industry is that people think by taking out muscle ups and taking out squat cleans, it's like, oh, those are the things that get people injured and snatches. It's like, well, actually, if you give Sally, who's never, you know, who hasn't done any dynamic work, you give her 100 bench hop overs or whatever it is, like she's going to tear her calf. She's going to injure her knees. And like I speak to physios and chiros and stuff, and most of the injuries these days, they come from, you know, F45, Barry's Bootcamp, you know, Orange Series. Yeah. They come from all the gyms. Exactly. And, you know, gym is safe.
What I also notice is like, just people will be like, oh, you do CrossFit. Obviously, CrossFit got very obsessed with getting strong, right? And then people are like, oh, I want to do functional fitness, but not really CrossFit style. So we don't, like, we're safer. We don't do heavy weights for time and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, it sounds good. But then I see them fall into a trap of like, well, now they don't do any heavy strength training.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, I don't really need to be like super strong anymore for my workouts because we just do like dumbbells and kettlebells and ski erg and bike. And they're sick workouts, but now you're just weak.
Yeah, exactly.
You're weak, small, and then you get other injuries because you're now weak going into the workouts, right?
Totally.
And just because you're not doing heavy squat cleans in a workout doesn't mean you shouldn't be like working on technique and strength and positioning in your strength work.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we created the solution that we did. And like I've spoken to some really good athletes that are now kind of through their heyday and the conversation we keep coming...
Oh, were they doing CrossFit?
Yeah, yep. They did CrossFit at a decently high level. You know, these guys in their like late 30s, 40s now who still try and do it a little bit, but they just kind of write their own program for themselves. And the conversation we're coming back to is not programming. The conversation we're coming back to is more broad. It's a group template versus individualization. That's what it comes back to. And ultimately, that's why we had to build our model. Put functional fitness and CrossFit and different movements aside. The core that we're getting to here is that there just needs to be some level of individualization because everyone is so different. Everyone has different injuries, different scar tissue, different abilities. Just writing the one prescription is, I think, where it gets dangerous. No matter how well you write it, it's still, for some people, it's going to be bad.
But that's why I think for most people, CrossFit is not sustainable in the very long term. Biggest reason being is like most people have a selection of types of movements that like just don't work well for them. Right, they're just like, man, like forever because of
back squats for me.
Yeah, like I got into this at 23, right? Like I didn't start this when I was 12, so because of my history, like these type of movements just always give me injuries, right? Because of my shoulders or my knees and my hips, right? And the problem is that if you want to do CrossFit, there's like no individualization because you have to do all these movements and they come up whether you like it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
So long term, forcing yourself to do those movements obviously like doesn't really work. It's like any good bodybuilder, right? He doesn't do all the bodybuilding movements.
Mm.
He takes out heaps of bodybuilders like, man, I don't do like Smith machine ever,
yeah,
because it cranks my shoulders, right? So they just do their movements that work around them, and that's why individualization is so important. But if you're sticking just with CrossFit, it's hard because like you're forced into non-individualized
any group template, Any group temp.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, anything that comes up. So it's like, yeah, I've heard some people go, oh, you know, I started, you know, just say arbitrarily, say F45, for example. Mm. And this could be any one of these different branches. And they just said, and by the way, it's not to say that what we're doing is perfect either. People still can get hurt at us, just at a lot less of a rate. And then when they do, we have a solution for them. Mm. But they're like, yeah, it was really good up until I hurt my back. And then I got into the class and I couldn't do any of the movements. And it's like, okay, but you can still work out, but you need modifications. Mm. But you can't go in and modify an F45 workout. It's a group template. It's 50 people in it. They're going to cycle through it. It's just not built for that. So that's just why you kind of have to realize that, yeah, just long term, there needs to be individualization. But some people aren't in the business of doing that, and that's fine. They want to do something else. So I don't hold it against them.
Okay, next question is like same thing. It's really on the programming line. Dale Hall Bowden. How much does slowing down a program affect progress? So what he wants to do is he wants to get, I think it's an 8-week program and do it over 12 weeks.
It's our 8-week core program.
Yeah. And he's in his 40s, and I think it's due to his age and then also just like work and family commitments.
Mm.
How much difference is it going to make if I slow it down?
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I always say sort of a minimum of 2, workouts or hit a body part twice a week to make good progress on it. And there's diminishing returns. So maybe, you know, considering your recovery, which is always the major thing you have to consider, which is your food, your sleep, your stress, how well can you recover from those 2 workouts? 2 workouts might be better than 3. Maybe you can't recover from 3. Maybe 3 puts you, maybe you dig a hole with 3 that you can't fill back in by the end of the week.
Yeah, I mean, I would say exactly what we just talked about. You should do this because this is a group template. This 8-week program we're giving you, it's a group template.
Yeah.
So it's not your template. Is everyone recover exactly the same? No. But we like to do it on a weekly basis because it just fits into everyone's routine, right? Yeah. I'm going to do this every Monday. But like your body doesn't know how many days there are in a week.
Yeah.
It just is living every single day. So whether this takes 8 or 12 weeks, doesn't matter. Obviously, if you do it too slowly, it's just not frequent enough to get progress. But yeah, I mean, if you recover less than the average, we're trying to write this for the average.
Yeah.
So if you recover less than the average because you're a bit older than our average person and you have like maybe a hectier lifestyle than the average person, yeah, you probably should do it slower.
Yeah.
Than the average person. If you have crazy recovery and you're 21, you could probably do our 8-week program in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably even better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, individualizing your group template in that way in terms of what you choose and how often, it's fine. Mm. I would be careful to drop to 1 a week because then
it's not enough.
It might be enough. But if you hit the minimum twice a week, yeah, I don't think it matters. Don't think it makes a difference. All right, before we get into this Netflix review, guys, obviously every day I'm waking up, I'm taking a few different things, but one of them, staple, True Protein, the whey, WP90, chocolate, put it in my green shake, and it just never causes me any issues. It's just such a high-quality product. There's no contaminants. There's no issues with the machines and the cutting. And every time, like, you know, I've been taking these products now, I was thinking over the break, nearly 6 years, 7 years now, and I've never had a digestive issue with them, which is absolutely crazy for a supplement. You know, the more processing that you put into a product, the more things that can go wrong, you know, at each stage of the processing. So they just absolutely kill it. And I think that's why they've grown over the years is such a, I mean, there were so many supplement companies that started all kind of around the similar time in the same space. I know one of them was, Progenix was like one of them as well. Muscle Farm was another one. But these companies, ultimately, I think they start, the corners that they cut in the beginning, you don't see play out until it's on a mass scale. And that's when the cutting corners and the cost saving and stuff really starts to show up. And True's, you know, it's always been priced at, you know, the upper end of the market. But because they don't cut corners, it's just a product that you can put in like a food that you're just never going to have a digestive issue with. That's why I love it.
Yeah, particularly the protein. I mean, for me, obviously I love it because I don't get any issues, but I also like it because I just recommend it to tons of people.
Yeah.
And I can just do it. You know, man, I can tell you, if you're a trainer or even if you just recommend to a friend, there's no worse feeling than recommending a protein.
Yeah.
They buy it. They spend, you know, their money on it, trust you, and they're like, but it went really badly.
Yeah.
And you just, yeah, you feel like an idiot, even though it's really out of your control. And true that it just never happened.
Yeah. No, I'm really careful to recommend food products and supplements and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I've never had an issue with recommending True. So fortunately, if you are getting some issues with your current products, digestive issues, you're causing gut inflammation. And long term, that's pretty bad for your body. And you're just not absorbing the protein. So I recommend getting the True Protein in America, because you guys can get it shipped out there now. So if you go to trueprotein.com.au, the US, you now have shipping from Australia. So I highly recommend getting it. For everyone else, You can just get it as normal. And our code is MindMuscle10. MindMuscle10, one word, that's going to get you 10% off on all products.
Okay, so we have a Netflix documentary. I think we'll have one for quite a while now because I caught up on some Netflix during the holidays.
Me too.
This first one is, it's called The Minimalist, Less is Now. Now, this is, it's a follow-up, I guess. Yeah, it's a follow-up. Came out in 2021, like I think very at the start of the year. But they had one in 2016. With the same guys in it. I don't know if it's the same director.
It's Matt DiBella.
Did the same guy? Yeah. Okay, cool.
Who moved to Sydney because of the virus. Here. Yeah, he moved here because his wife is Australian from Sydney.
So he has like a big YouTube channel, right?
Huge YouTube channel. Yeah, he gets millions and millions of views. He's like interviewed Gary Vee and stuff. Mm. Yeah, he's a huge channel.
So he moved to Sydney.
Yeah, so she's from Sydney. So I watched the video because he pops up in my YouTube feed sometimes and he was like, I'm moving. So he originally he cut his teeth in New York. That's where he got famous, which is like a lot of creators. Met his wife in New York and then...
An Aussie wife.
Yeah. And then I think he was like, his family was in that sort of area on the East Coast.
Yeah.
But they wanted to move to LA so that they could fly from LA to Sydney pretty easily.
Yeah.
And then from LA to the East Coast pretty easily. But what ended up happening is they just never flew anywhere.
Mm.
And this is before the virus, a couple of years before. And then when the virus hit, they're just like, well, we spent a bunch of time with your family, now let's just fly to Sydney with my family. It's a much better situation in Australia. Yeah. It seems to only be getting worse in America. He did his hotel quarantine a few weeks ago, and now he's here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's going to... I mean, I don't think I'm going to bump into him necessarily, but I could. Hey, I'm not going to put it past him. He's posted some shit about going to Bondi.
When we bump into him, we've got some shit to tell him about his documentary. So, I liked the first one that came out in 2016.
Which is called Minimalism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to find it if you search Minimalist. I really didn't like this new one. I
love their podcast.
Yeah, the two guys that act in it, the stars of the show,
Ryan?
Yeah, I'll get their names. But they have their own podcast. I think it's the Minimalist podcast. I think it's a huge podcast.
Millions of downloads per episode.
I don't think they need a pump up here. But anyway, the documentary, like I thought the story behind it was exactly the same as the one 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So they just told the same story of how they got into it. So if you watch the first one, it was the same. It was exactly the same story. It's completely unnecessary. And that was like the first half of it. And then the second half, yeah, they tell you that it's really good if you throw out lots of your stuff and life's not just about buying lots of things, but I just thought it was so, so boring. And the takeaway at the end was like, try throwing out one thing a day for a month or something. And I was like, okay, great. Just tell me that at the start.
Yeah.
Why did this take an hour?
Yeah. You know, when you have a subject like minimalism, it can, you know, you can get it after a few episodes on a podcast. You know, you're kind of rehashing the same idea over and over and over again, which I get, right? We do a similar sort of thing here. I'd say just our area of expertise a little bit more broad than just going after one idea, which is minimalism. And so I think what I was expecting from Less Is Now was an expanded new research, more statistics, a different look.
I mean, a lot has happened in 4 years.
Yeah.
Which they kind of hinted out with like the Amazon boxes arriving, which is true. When we turned up in America, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was everywhere. Like Amazon boxes just rained from the sky and were left scattered along the ground. Yeah. But they didn't this didn't really paint the picture of how crazy consumerism has got.
Yeah, I think they had elements of it which I wish they dove into more, which were things around statistics and changing consumer behavior. And I wanted almost like a social dilemma style.
It was nothing like that.
I wanted more statistics. I wanted more data. I wanted more stuff science. That I
would come onto the show and be like, you would not believe this.
Yeah.
Like, dude, did you know like 90% of Americans this and that and this? Yeah. And it's like, dude, I've got to.
That was a little bit of that stuff. Yeah.
But I just didn't have that feeling when I walked. But it seemed like to me they had like run out of content because of COVID and they asked these guys to put together something in a month and we'll chuck it up on Netflix. Yeah.
Honestly, where it lost me was they have this running theme or this. It's basically both of them telling their story, but they just tell it in this way how they've set the cameras up and they've filmed it and they've done this scripted storytelling version. Which felt very unnatural, very cringy. It was very hard to watch. And I was looking at Ev and she was like, I'm cringing at this scene.
It was painful.
And I was like, oh, this is bad. Look, I love the message.
I love the guys. I love the message. I mean, they're like us, even more, like, much more popular and like, with a good story.
Yeah.
Which was in the first one, which I liked.
And their books. It's in their books as well.
I don't know. This one just had nothing new.
Nothing new. But maybe for people that was their first time with them, maybe that's who they're going for, a new audience. Maybe that's what they were trying to cut into. But yeah, for an existing audience, there wasn't anything there for me.
But the reason I was actually very excited to watch it was because funnily enough, like the 2 weeks leading up into this, which I had for holidays and coming into this, was I did actually throw out, like, I would say I estimate about half of my belongings.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I did it...
Just clothes or what?
No, no, everything.
Oh, wow.
So the reason was because...
Books?
Everything.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, because we're renovating my apartment, right? Yeah. So it was like, I was like, how does this whole thing go? I've never renovated. She's like, oh, we're going to have to take everything out in boxes and then put everything back in. I was like...
You're moving.
Yeah, it's like moving, right? But everything, because obviously they're renovating the whole apartment, right? So everything's going.
Yeah, it's a construction site.
So I was like, man, I don't want to like pack all this shit up, and if I don't really need it, have to bring it all back in. So I was like, okay, I want to make this job easy. I know I'm going to be busy during the year. I don't want this to become like the stress of the century during the year. So I'm like, I'm going to like get ahead on now. So I was like, I'm just going to take out everything that I'm not going to want to put back into this apartment. So I went through every single drawer. And every cupboard, like anywhere a thing can possibly be in the apartment. And we just did it one by one. Like I listed every single drawer, every single cupboard that we have to do. And it took a while.
Did you use their rules? The 90-90 rule?
So I didn't look at the minimalism stuff before.
Okay.
Sorry. I just got started. And my rule was just like, am I going to use this again in the near future?
So their,
no, gone.
So their rule with that is the 90-90 rule, right? So did I use it in the last 90 days? And will I use it in the next 90 days?
That's pretty much how I operate it.
Okay.
That's a good rule.
Yeah.
That actually is.
Because it accounts for seasons for clothing.
That's a really good rule. That's basically how I use it. And I was like, look, I might need this, but I had this idea, which was like, if there's 100 things, I might end up needing 3 of them again. I'll just buy those 3 things again. Rather than have the 97 sit around and me box them up and box them back in. So I counted it. It was, between me and my partner, it was 19 black garbage bags.
19 garbage bags. 19. Full garbage bags.
Full. Completely full. Like,
so
just
hundreds, maybe 1,000 items.
Yeah, easily.
Wow.
There was a lot of stuff.
Was it mostly her stuff or mostly your stuff?
That was like 50-50.
Really?
Yeah, like 50-50. Probably she had a little bit more than me. I'm not like a big buyer, but what I am is I'm not a big thrower-outer. So,
right.
So even if you don't have a big inflow, I do not have a big outflow.
Right. So, I was going to say, bro, like because I'm like, I definitely buy more stuff than you, but I clean stuff out a lot.
Yeah, so I never do that. So like things just never leave my apartment. And we've been there for...
So what was like one of the oldest things that you had there?
Like, oh man,
do you have stuff from like high school, like high school textbooks or some shit?
Nah, because I moved in 5-6 years ago, so it's like it was kind of a reset button then. But so almost everything I collected from that point, you know, was
there. Like old CrossFit Nano shoes and like
That was like one thing I actually decided to keep was I found these like my like first pair of Nanos. And I was like, nah, fuck it, I'm wearing them for CrossFit workouts.
Were they black ones?
Yeah, Reeboks? Good black Reeboks, and I've actually worn them since.
Yeah.
Because that was like my biggest takeaway of the whole thing was we threw out so much stuff. And what I liked about it was now I've only got the stuff I like to use. And
only stuff that gives you value, bro.
And I rediscovered some things that were, you know, just at the bottom of the piles, right?
Yeah.
I never touched them, and now I'm excited to use them. And I want to make an effort to try and, like, clear stuff out more commonly. But I would really recommend it. I will say it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It took, like, hours and hours and hours. Because I had to, like, sort through every single item I belong that I own and, like, decide whether to keep it or not.
Yeah.
But it's extraordinary because, yeah, I threw out 20 garbage bags. I estimate then that as a pair... We own 40 garbage bags of stuff in total, and I have not missed one thing.
No, you don't
miss
it. And
I had 20 garbage bags of shit.
No,
just hidden. Like, if you walk in the apartment, it looks the same.
Yeah.
It was just inside drawers and cupboards.
Yeah, stored. It's in storage. No, the crazy part about this realization you have, because I just realized in the last, you know, 6-7 years, I've moved 4 or 5 times.
That's probably why you don't have as much.
Yeah.
I haven't gone anywhere.
You haven't moved.
Haven't moved.
Yeah, but I've moved heaps. And you almost didn't have to move, because you didn't move too far from your parents' house. You could have kept a lot of stuff there as well if you needed it.
And because it was a new place, it was like, I had heaps of space.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just bring everything.
Yeah. But one thing actually was interesting about the documentary and the sort of last thing here is they don't... So, typically the Australian dream, the American dream, the Western dream is... You buy a house one day, right?
Mm.
You want a big house with a backyard and a pool and space, right? But what's interesting is they both had that. They both had a house, right? They both had a house with, like you said, more toilets than people, backyard, everything. But now they've moved to an apartment. And this is with a dog and with kids. They've moved back into an apartment. And one of their messages is like, you just get more space and you just fill the space with stuff.
100%.
Right? But I'm torn because I can see how it is, man, there's no way I could have grown up. I would imagine growing up in an apartment with my brother and my sister and my parents, it would have been like, we ended up growing into like large human beings. Would have not had that much space. Mm. But is that just the pre-programming that you've had growing up that you think you need all this space when you don't necessarily need it? Why can't you just go to the park, right?
Yeah.
there's huge parks. There's parks everywhere. Why can't you just go to beach? There's beaches everywhere. We have plenty of space here.
And you don't have to look after it.
Yeah. And it's like, and but with the apartment, obviously there's like, you know, you want a decent sized apartment still, and you want enough space for everyone to have their own space. But when is it, when do you cross that line as to like useful space, valuable space? Now there's too much space. Now just space for the sake of space. Because I'll tell you what, all the people I know in our lives that are a lot older than us that have enormous houses, multi-million dollar houses, they don't think they're any better than their small houses. They're like, now I just have more shit to clean.
And it costs a lot to maintain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think putting the huge house with the multi-levels and the lift and the five-car garage on a pedestal, I think that's false. I don't think it makes you any happier. And I think that you're, and like they say in the documentary, your perception, we're really bad at guessing that we'd be happier with X when often we're not. And so it makes me think, would I just be happy if I lived in an apartment for the rest of my life? If, yeah, if I didn't have the programming that I need a house because I grew up in a house. Because put it this way, right? Everyone in Asia and China and Hong Kong or whatever, they grew up in apartments. They did.
Yeah, and it's like they've 10 people up, in there. Yeah.
And that's why when they go, they come here and they've got a family of six or whatever, they buy the biggest apartment and the nicest apartment. But they don't, but they could easily afford a house. They buy a $5 million apartment. They can go get a $5 million house, but they choose the apartment because that's just what they used to.
And they probably don't just collect that much shit.
They don't.
They never had that much space for it.
And it's just like, then it helps you. Maybe does it help you focus on the things that make you happier? Because you buy a bigger house and what's the thing you want? You just want to fill it with more shit, right? Oh, we need a second lounge room with this stuff and maybe I'll be better when I have this artwork and this lawnmower and this, and you just get all this shit, but it doesn't make you any happier. It actually doesn't. So interesting. Interesting way to think about
it. So I would just clean out your house instead of watching the documentary. Maybe watch the first one if you haven't watched it.
Use the 90-90 rule.
It's a really good rule.
Yeah.
And the best example of it was, you know, I was cleaning out even the books and I was like, man, like I should really keep the books. Like, no, I'm not going to read them, right? No. So I sent them and then I put them in this, there's this little thing near my house where it's like a book share. You can put it in and other people can come and take the books.
Oh yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And then like 2 days later, I'm like walking back down that street and I look and there's some lady like taking out my book and she's like reading it. And I'm like, that
is such value for other people. Use. That's what it's, yeah.
I never would have touched it. Now someone's enjoying 100%. The book.
Yeah, that's probably the last thing is like, you don't just throw it in the bin, donate it.
No, I did. We did heaps of Gumtree.
Yeah.
It's like Craigslist in the States. We just put it up for free and we had people just coming in and taking stuff. They, if you put it up for free, it goes quickly and you would be astonished. Like, I'm like, this is trash. Nobody wants it. Nine people message in a second. Please hold it for me.
Yeah. It's valuable to someone else. Yeah. And that's I think, better for society. They say you're happier giving gifts than you are taking for yourself. So anyway, let's leave it there. Less is now. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5. It was I think it was pretty boring and not great from a filmmaking perspective, but the message is really good, which is why I'm still giving it a 2.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 1. It's true. There is less. There is almost nothing in it.
Less is now. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. First off show of the year. Big 2021 ahead. Like I said, detailed plans, but held loosely with loose expectations. So we'll see you guys on the other side. Thanks for tuning in and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.